The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
As the announcer of this show, I sometimes ask myself, to what shall I compare Eric? Shall I compare him to a summer's day? Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May.
But not Eric. I'll tell you, nothing shakes this guy.
And now here he is, wearing green leotards and a jester's coxcomb, Eric Metaxas.
Exit Todd, stage left.
Thank you, Todd, for revealing the color of the leotards I'm wearing. I appreciate it. I think it's fair that my audience should know. Today, ladies and gentlemen, right now, I get to talk about something, about someone of whom I'm enamored, Justice Clarence Thomas. I had the great privilege, not much more than a month ago, to be invited to the Naval Observatory for a Christmas party at the Vice President's residence, and I was staggered to see in the room with me the great Justice Clarence Thomas, to have a few words with him. My greatest regret ever is that I didn't get a selfie. But that's all behind us now. I have in the studio the director of a brand new film, which is opening up Friday, this Friday, January 31st, the director, Michael Pack. Michael, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I am thrilled that you've made this film. It has gotten encomia from even such as the Washington Post and Time magazine. The Washington Post said that this is a marvel of filmmaking. It is a marvel of filmmaking that 2 hours passed so quickly. At the end of a screening I recently attended, there weren't many dry eyes in the room. Time magazine, which 50 years ago used to be a thing, says that this film offers viewers rare insight into the mind of a justice known for his reticence on the public stage. Michael Pack, tell us your story. How did you come to direct a film about the great man we know as Justice Clarence Thomas?
Well, I had heard from mutual friends that Justice Thomas was tired of having his story told by his enemies. He was tired of the half-truths and outright falsehoods that were circulating about him. So I met with him and then I spoke to him. And at that time, I didn't know that much about his story. I only knew really the confirmation part. But reading about him, reading his memoir, I saw it was a great story, a great American story, and needed to be told. And fortunately, I was able to convince Justice Thomas to let me tell it.
Well, it's an amazing thing because I think those of us who were of age during the confirmation hearings in the early 90s, you know, you cannot help when you witness something like that, even if you believe his side of the story, to have the narrative tainted by the other side. Mm. And I think that's the horror of the that's the horror of when the Me Too movement goes wrong. When someone is attacked, when someone is smeared, even if it comes to be that those things are lies, the lies nonetheless, they have a stickiness that can haunt you for years. I presume the same thing will happen with Kavanaugh, that there will always be people who, you know, a smell comes into the room, an unpleasant odor when they think of that person, even if they can't prove it. And it's a gruesome thing that in this day and age that's the case, especially when you know the larger story of Justice Thomas. So I'm thrilled that you stepped up, albeit all these years later, to tell the larger story.
Well, I think that's right, what you say. I mean, not only is it very hard to come back from a smear, but the people who don't like him continue to try to tell his story their way, the Anita Hill story. When his hearing was over, Americans believed Justice Thomas and not Anita Hill 2-1, in part because of his very passionate defense during the hearings. But only a year later, it had flipped because his enemies, the left, you know, continue to tell the story, and his side did not. And they were willing to use racist stereotypes to depict him. I mean, there were all these cartoons of him in Ku Klux Klan robes as a shoeshine boy polishing Scalia's shoes, racist tropes that, as Justice Thomas says, you couldn't use with any liberal African American. And all that stuff, the attempts to characterize him as stupid, untalkative, not smart, doesn't do much work, all very untrue. And I think anyone who watches this film, whatever their politics, cannot come away still believing those caricatures of Justice Thomas.
Well, I'm just so glad that, as I say, that this story is out. And I want to encourage as many people as possible to see it. It'll be in theaters this weekend.
Well, that's right. So it'll be in about 20, 21 theaters starting on Friday and then some more the following weeks. And if you go to our website, justicethomasmovie.com, you can find out if it's playing in your area. I mean, it's in New York, two theaters in New York, in D.C., in L.A., in Chicago, in Dallas, in Houston, in Detroit. It's in a lot of cities. But if it's not in a city where your listeners or viewers are, they can sign up on our website. And if there are 30 of them, we can make an event happen where they are. So I really encourage everyone to go. There's a tendency on the part of people who are more sympathetic to Thomas on the right, more religious conservatives and political conservatives, not to go to movies. People on the left are very good at going to movies and supporting their filmmakers. But one of the reasons the left owns the culture is they care, they show up, they support it. I think of the film about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RBG, which did huge box office,
right,
nominated for an Academy Award,
right,
and people showed up. I saw it. I believe people of any politics could see and benefit from the Thomas story, but surely those for whom it resonates have to actually buy tickets and go to the theater.
Well, I'm glad you say that because you're right. What is your journey a little bit? Because I'm just fascinated with the idea that you made the film. How do you get to a place where you're making films? Where did you start in life?
Well, I grew up, you know, here in New York City on the Upper West Side.
Were you a red baby?
I wasn't really.
My
parents are traditional, you know, Upper West Side Jewish liberals. You know, they're still there. I just came from their house. But I was a liberal. I grew up in the shadow of the 60s. I took in my high school, everyone went, the school chartered buses to go to Washington during anti-war marches. I never even thought it was political. You know, everyone did it. And in college, I was on the left, and it wasn't until after college that I made my journey to the right.
Was there any specific inciting incident, or was it just a general series of events?
When I came back to New York and after I went to NYU Film School for a while and started to work in the film business and started to make films, I saw that my colleagues in the documentary world were making films I thought were horrible. Pro-nuclear freeze films, if you remember the nuclear freeze, unilateral disarmament on the part of the United States, radical environmental films, essentially anti-American films, anti-capitalist films, anti-business films. And I just realized that I did not believe. And I thought with a partner that we would make the counter story. I believe that the counter story was so clear. This is what happens when you're in your 20s. I thought the counter story was so clear that it would only take me five or six years to defeat the other side. Then I could go to Hollywood and make, you know, trashy movies. But it didn't take 5 or 6 years, and they were way more powerful than I thought, and it turned out to be a career.
Well, all the more reason to be in the field of media and filmmaking, because there are many people who know what we know, yet it doesn't seem to have gained much purchase in the wider culture. The wider culture and the media culture in Hollywood still seems to me to be dramatically left, and it is a strange thing in a world with a free market, with freedom. We ought to be able to tell these stories, and theoretically we're able to tell these stories, but there are so few people on our side of the political spectrum who are telling stories. It is interesting how the left really tend to tell, you know, the large majority of the stories that get told.
I think that is absolutely true. And since I make historical documentaries and I'm interested in making historical fictional films, narrative films too, I feel the left has told all the stories of recent American history.
Yeah.
They tell the story. You know, just this one example. They choose to tell the Ruth Bader Ginsburg story. Okay, it's a good story. I choose to tell the Clarence Thomas story.
Yeah.
Even if you do these things fairly, the stories you choose to tell are very significant.
Forgive me. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. More about Clarence Thomas with Michael Pack.
Beautiful, she's telling me we'll be with. She's picked out a king size.
Oh, hello. Hey, I'm talking about Justice Clarence Thomas, who is the subject of a brand new film opening in theaters across the country tomorrow, Friday, January 31st. I'm sitting here with the director, Michael Pack. Michael, you must also be a producer of the film.
Yes, I'm the director-producer. My wife, Gina Kappa Pack, who is my business partner as well as my wife, she and I together executive produced it.
Okay.
And, of course, there's a big team working on it.
Oh, forget about the team. Let's just pretend it's you and your wife. So you just said to me on the break that you interviewed Justice Thomas and his wife, Ginny, whom I've also had the privilege of meeting a couple of times. You interviewed them for 30 hours.
That's right.
So this is them and mostly him talking to camera, telling his story.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, originally we were going to make it more of a traditional documentary, an interview, you know, 15 or so experts across the spectrum from different parts of his life.
But right.
It turns out that the best teller of his story is Justice Thomas. As you know, having met him, but maybe your viewers and listeners don't. He is a great storyteller,
yeah,
and has a wonderful voice and is a great raconteur. So my idea was to let him tell his story. So he looks right at camera. He talks about his life from his birth up through today. So viewers will get the sense that they're listening to him. It's like spending 2 hours with Justice Thomas, hearing how he experienced things, like the confirmation, like his confirmation battle, but right from the beginning, from his growing up at Pinpoint. You know this, he grew up in Pinpoint, a Gullah-speaking area outside of Savannah, so English was not his first language.
A Gullah-speaking area. I mean, if you want to really get a picture of where he comes from, that is deep South. That is poverty. That's just an amazing thing that he comes out of that world. I mean, you contrast that with where Barack Obama comes,
yeah,
from. His father is a big, big deal academic.
That's right.
You know, his mother is an intellectual academic. This guy comes from beyond the far side of the tracks.
That's right. And he grew up in the segregated South. You know, so not only was he poor, but it was the Jim Crow era. There is hardly anyone in American life that has come from so far behind to such a high prominence as, you know, to serve as a justice on the Supreme Court. It's a great, at one level, it's simply a great Horatio Alger story, something that could only happen in America, an amazing story. And when you see that some of the people he grew up with, I mean, as he said, most of the people he grew up with were functionally illiterate. And many of them still, I mean, they're good people, but they're not what you'd think of as Supreme Court justices. It's really an amazing transformation. And the poverty deepened after Pinpoint. When he was six, his mother took him and his brother to Savannah, whereas Justice Thomas said he exchanged rural poverty for urban squalor. There, he lived in a place where he had no bed. He slept in a chair. He didn't have enough to eat. He was cold in the winter. When his mother brought him to school, no one cared. He just left school and wandered the streets of Savannah. I mean, the toilet didn't flush anywhere but into the yard. I mean, real poverty, poverty that is hard to imagine today. And then, as you know, after a few years of that, she brought the two boys to her father, his grandfather, to raise. And that's what turned Thomas's life around.
What did he call his grandfather?
The greatest man he ever knew. He called him that.
He called him that, but he had a name for him. I can't remember what it was now. Anyway, it is amazing because compared to what we just heard, Abe Lincoln grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Right.
I mean, this is an amazing American story. Rags to riches hardly does it justice. And because it is so profoundly American and so profoundly hopeful, it is all the more scandalous that most Americans don't know this story.
It really is. I mean, I think it's fundamentally an inspiring story. And the people who have seen it, whatever their politics, find it inspiring at that level. I mean, they may not agree with Justice Thomas by the end. I have many friends, as you do, who are liberal, most of my friends. So they don't agree with him. But you can't not be inspired. I mean, his resilience, his surmounting every obstacle, and then his unwillingness to define himself as a victim. As you just said, he grew up in these circumstances that make it easy to think of yourself as a victim. But he chose not to. And even his grandfather, who is, you know, had even a harder life, chose not to define himself
as a victim. But see, that is the scandal. If someone like that doesn't define themselves as a victim, they're going against the reigning liberal narrative that says you must define yourself as a victim. And if you don't, you're a traitor.
Well, that's right.
That's the horror. And those of us who see that lie owe it to ourselves and our communities and the country to familiarize ourselves with his story. I really hope that tomorrow when this is in theaters, that anybody who can go will go. This is the kind of thing, too. Bring young people with you.
Yeah.
They need to know this story because it is such a seminal story for our time. It's not a story. It is one of the stories of our time.
Well, that's right. I mean, his story is a classic one. I mean, as it goes on, you know, after he, you know, his grandfather brought him, sent him to parochial schools. His grandfather was a Catholic, a rare thing, and he felt he felt his values were very biblically grounded. But he sent Justice Thomas to parochial school, then a segregated one, an all-black one, run by Irish nuns who also gave Thomas discipline, hard work, and sort of moral values,
right,
and a good education. And Justice Thomas so thrived there that he wanted to be a priest, something not everybody knows about him, and entered the seminary. These seminaries were all white or just integrating. He was one of the first. And now it's the late 60s, and this is why I think it is very much of the times. And he started to experience the sort of racism of that time from these white seminarians, reaching a peak during when they were watching TV the day Martin Luther King Jr. was shot, and one of the seminarians said, "I hope that son of a bitch dies."
Are you kidding? One of the seminarians in a Catholic seminary.
And Justice Thomas had already felt the church wasn't doing enough for civil rights. And he lost his vocation and his faith. And he told his grandfather, the greatest man he ever knew, his effective father, that he didn't want to become a priest. And his grandfather kicked him out of the house. An amazing setback. Someone he revered kicked him out of the house. So he had to go wherever. He happened to have a full scholarship at Holy Cross, and he went there. But he became a radical. He decided race and racism explained everything. He felt his grandfather was a sucker working for nothing. And at Holy Cross, he hung out with Marxists. He helped form the Black Student Union. He invited Panthers to speak.
See, now this is the part of his story that almost nobody knows. I mean, how extraordinary that he did go there,
That's right.
He did get sucked into that way of thinking.
That's right. And it's very important that he understands it. I mean, that he understands that as a real response to things like racism and oppression. And he did get sucked into it. He just worked his way through it. He hit a kind of bottom when he went to a anti-war rally that became violent in Cambridge and felt himself caught up in mob violence. And at that point, when he went back to Holy Cross, he hadn't prayed in a long time. He went to the chapel, then closed. It was well after midnight. Knelt and prayed and asked God to take anger out of his heart and he would never hate again. And that was the beginning of coming back to his faith.
You know, it's fascinating because you and I and, as you've now mentioned, Justice Thomas, we've seen the other side. We've experienced the other side. We've been part of the other side. And I think if you can escape that, you really do arrive where we are now with a different perspective to really be able to appreciate what it is that enables somebody to think differently than we do now because we once thought that way.
Well, that's right. It gives him a real depth. a real understanding of what other people think. And it took him many years to think through what was the wrong with his radicalism and liberalism.
Yeah.
It was only watching many, many social programs fail, from busing to affirmative action, and seeing them play out in his own life, that made him finally become a political conservative. And,
yeah.
And the first person Republican he voted for was Ronald Reagan, and he went to work in the Reagan administration. But it took him a long time. And I think, unlike myself, if I don't know how it was with you, Eric, I'm impressed that Justice Thomas thought his way back on his own. I was really with a small group that was already being disenchanted with the left, especially here in New York. But he thought it through. I mean, he read Thomas Sowell, for instance, but he didn't have a group that was helping him.
Right.
He worked it out himself. I think an intellectual and spiritual achievement beyond my own.
I would have to say, as a Christian, it's God's grace. You cannot ever take credit for working your way through these things, because as many as work their way through, many more don't. I mean, my situation is a kind of a combination of both the ones you've just described. I think of David Horowitz, another extraordinary example. Mm. We're going to be right back, folks. Tomorrow in theaters, all this weekend, Clarence Thomas, in his own words, in theaters this weekend. I'm talking to Michael Pack, the director. We'll be right back. Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all: does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot, because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, "I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read." This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess: your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life, for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Hey there, folks. This is Eric from Taxes Show. I'm talking to Michael Pack, P-A-C-K, who is the director and producer of a brand new film about Justice Clarence Thomas. It's called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words, opening in theaters mañana. That's tomorrow, Friday, the 31st of January. There is no more January. That's as far as it goes. But it goes into the weekend, which begins February. Amazing that you've made the film. Most people know of Clarence Thomas mainly because of the horrifying hearings. I remember them well. Can we talk about the confirmation hearings?
Yes.
What does he say? Does he say anything about the film in the film?
He does. I mean, by the way, the movie opens the 31st, but it'll be in theaters at least that week. And if people show up, maybe beyond it.
But we want people to make it a big opening weekend.
Folks, you're
the people I'm talking about. seriously, what a wonderful opportunity. I mean, look, you said it earlier. When somebody makes a film like this, people need to support it. Get out there. Do your duty. Films like this don't get made every day. We need to encourage the market by giving them the thumbs up by paying for a ticket. But the confirmation hearings were so horrifying. Mm-hmm. Can you share what he talks about in the film?
Yes. I mean, he talks about it at length. So because of our format of Clarence Thomas in his own words, he talks about what it was like to experience it sort of narratively. So you know, first of all, of course, once he started working for the Reagan administration and became a public figure, he was attacked by the left. So the way Clarence Thomas sees it, this is the peak or a high point in an ongoing attack that had already been extensive, you know, and gone on for years and years.
I mean, you want to talk about racism. This is the definition of racism. Because you're black, you can't think that way. You have no right to think that way. We're going to persecute you. And they did persecute him. And it culminates in the confirmation hearings.
That's right. I think you mentioned this earlier, that people who don't like him call him a traitor to his race. I mean, an amazing charge. I always think about this. I went from being a liberal to a conservative. No one's ever said I'm a traitor to my race.
Oh, yeah. You're a fake. You're a self-hating Jew. Everybody knows that,
well,
right?
How dare you? But they don't do that as often as they do it with Clarence Thomas. And they don't do it quite as liberally, if I may use that term. But a notable earlier attack was in the 80s. Hodding Carter, a Southern journalist who had a prominent role in the Jimmy Carter administration, wrote an article in Playboy saying that Justice Thomas, because he worked for Reagan and because of what he did, was like a chicken-eating preacher gathering crumbs at the white man's table.
Yeah.
Imagine
only Hodding Carter and his ilk could get away with open racism like that. Shame on him. The hearings themselves,
yes.
He was accused by Anita Hill, who had worked for him, of various kinds of sexual abuse, intimidation. He denied it. Where are we now with that? Does he deny it again in this film?
He denies it, absolutely. But I think it's good for listeners to remember that was only the latter part of the hearing. So it began in a sort of traditional hearing. Remember, this is after Bork. So Justice Thomas and everyone else geared up for a tough confirmation battle, and they had a tough battle. He was questioned for 5 days, and there was especially women's groups thought he was going to overturn Roe, and he was asked lots of questions on abortion, and they spread misleading facts about him, misleading allegations about him that he had to deal with. He smoked pot. He was anti-Semitic. So there was that in the media, plus 5 grueling days. Remember, the Democrats controlled the Senate. Joe Biden chaired the committee. And there were really tough questions. And so when that was over, the committee voted 7-7, split, but sent his nomination up to the full Senate for a vote. Justice Thomas and his wife thought, well, that's over. It was difficult, but it was over. They went away to relax, and then the Anita Hill allegations were leaked to NPR Newsday.
Doesn't this sound a little bit familiar?
Indeed, the Kavanaugh thing.
I want to say, look, what happened to Bork, that was 87, right?
Yeah.
What happened to Clarence Thomas was 91.
Yeah.
Kavanaugh was 2019. It's the same absolutely despicable playbook. It is despicable. I remember in 87, part of my conversion away from liberalism being a Democrat was watching the Bork hearings and losing respect for my then hero, Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, what is happening here? I had enough wits about me to see that something really ugly was happening. By the time it happened in 91, it was the same thing. You think, what? This at the last minute, somebody comes out of the weeds with these allegations. We saw it with Kavanaugh again and again and again. It's despicable that in the United States of America, people would play this game. It is as nasty and cynical as it gets. But so let's go back. Anita Hill comes out of the weeds to claim some dramatic things, throws the hearings into chaos.
Chaos. And then it's a front page story. It's everywhere. Now, a lot of people misremember her allegations because of the very horrific Me Too allegations that have come since. It was verbal. She did not allege any physical assault by Justice Thomas. I mean, no one denies that what she alleged was, in fact, sexual harassment. But he talked about pornographic movies. She alleged he said lots of inappropriate things that he completely denies. But somehow, when the story is often told, the people who like to think Anita Hill is the Rosa Parks of the sexual harassment movement downplay those charges.
Hang on. We're going to go. This is called a cliffhanger. We'll be right back to continue that sentence.
You make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed.
I can't lie, no more of your darkness.
Hey there, folks. It's the Erkman Taxes Show. I'm talking to Michael Pack, the director and producer of a brand new film opens in theaters tomorrow. You've got to see it. It's called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words.
And you go to the website.
And what is the website?
And you have to go to the website to see if it's playing near you. JusticeThomasMovie.com. We list all the theaters. And as I say, if it's not near you, you can sign up on the website to get a showing near you. But if you go to JusticeThomasMovie.com, you can see where it's playing and you can watch the trailer.
Okay. JusticeThomasMovie.com. I'll put that out on my own social media because it is so important to get the word out. Okay. So we were talking about the hearings, and you were saying that Anita Hill was making these really bizarre, dramatic accusations. And you can imagine that anybody would be really blindsided because they were bizarre.
They were bizarre. I mean, that puts it well. And it was the first time the Senate talked about these things, and that was then shocking to people. I mean, After the next major scandal later was the Clinton scandals, and then people sort of got more used to this. But it was the first time. So it was then shocking, and everyone was shocked. But the Thomases really felt, as I mentioned earlier, there had been the first part of the hearing, and now this is the second part, as they experienced it. And we, the viewer of the film, experienced it with them. And as Justice Thomas says, it's like you've ended one marathon, you relax, and then someone says, oops, we forgot to tell you, you've got to run another. So for this second marathon, dealing with the Anita Hill charges, from his point of view, total lies coming out of nowhere, a woman he had tried to help. As Ginny, his wife, says, there was nothing left of him. They were spent. So they felt they had to fall back on their faith. She felt this was now a spiritual battle. So they did a lot of praying. They had a prayer group come to their house. They prayed before they went out. They really had to rely on a higher power to get them through. And they felt that very strongly. And you can see why as you watch the film and feel it with them.
Well, I remember that the hearing that they were praying together, and it's a very moving thing when you're so humbled, you're crushed, that you have nowhere to turn but to the God that you know loves you and is with you. I think of Jackie Robinson, one of the stories that you rarely hear, but he also was a very serious Christian, politically mostly conservative, very similar. And that story hardly ever gets told. I've told it a number of times in a book that I wrote. But I have to say that it is interesting that he and his wife, Ginny, did rely on their faith. And, of course, they did get through it, but not without scars.
Well, that's right. I think the scars run deep. I will say that, as we mentioned earlier, Eric, I interviewed them both separately, but combined for over 30 hours over a 6-month period. And pulling them through the talk about the confirmation was really hard for both of them. I mean, really hard. I feel honored that they let me do that without getting mad at me. Ginny, cried several times during the interview. I mean, it was hard to even relive it. I can't imagine what it was like to actually live it.
That's interesting. I all the more reason that I hope folks will go see the film. I want to reiterate that the website is JusticeThomasMovie.com. This really is the thing that you can bring young people to if they're bright enough to care about these things. Really, you owe it to them to expose them to this part of our history.
And bring people who don't agree with you to it. I think, as I say, people, it's a good movie. It's a great story. Bring your friends that you may not agree with politically or in other ways.
Well, if the Washington Post and Time magazine can say such great things about it, I think it's safe to say that this is not a film only for people who like Justice Thomas, but it's a film for everybody. How old is Justice Thomas now?
71, 72.
Okay, so it's an interesting thing. If Bork had been confirmed, we would have had to go through this again because he died a number of years ago. It's interesting to think how young Justice Thomas was when he went through this and that he's still vigorous and healthy, thank God, now, because we really do need him.
Indeed. I think this is his time. I mean, the film goes on from the confirmation battle to talk about his time on the court. But I think this is really his time. I mean, there are more conservative justices on the court. He's sort of the senior member. People are looking to him. For many years, he wrote dissents, and dissents are very powerful ways to change opinions on the court. But now he has the capacity of writing the majority opinions in many cases. And a lot of ideas that he has been championing and leading over many years now have a chance to come to fulfillment. So I think this is his time. People talk about him retiring, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I certainly hope he doesn't retire. I always cringe when I hear about great people thinking, well, I think I'm going to retire. I think, for crying out loud, what could you possibly do that's more important than you? And, you know, and he's quite young. He's not 81.
No.
And you know, when you have people like Breyer and Ruth Bader Ginsburg serving well into their 80s, it seems ridiculous that anybody should even consider it. I certainly hope he doesn't. Because we are at an inflection point in the culture where we have the ability to have an originalist court undoing some of the horrors of the last, 60 years or something like that. And it is necessary to have his kind of leadership in there.
Absolutely. I mean, and Justice Thomas takes things back to first principles, like his opinions on the administrative state. You know, to what extent can Congress delegate things to federal agencies, and to what extent should federal agencies be totally independent, you know, not controlled by the president? I mean, we see this playing out in impeachment, but there's a real constitutional principle, and Justice Thomas was early in trying to get people to think about that. Do we want a fourth branch of government? It's not in the Constitution, where only three are listed. You know, so what is its foundation? To what extent are these things constitutional? He began those questions, and now they're coming back, and they're very important questions with long-term implications. So that's right. I mean, his kind of jurisprudence, this is its time.
I'm afraid we're out of time, but I am just so grateful to you, Michael Peck, not for only taking the time to be here, but for creating this important film. The website, justicethomasmovie.com. The film is called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. Michael Peck, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric. It was great.
Who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
Hey, folks, what a day. What a day on the Eric Metaxas Show. We got Brian Kilmeade. We got Zmirak. We're talking about Clarence Thomas. It's unbelievable. Speaking of unbelievable, I think that I'm either being shadow banned or something on Facebook. I cannot post on my normal Facebook page, where I have like 80,000 followers on the Facebook page. And we have tried. I got tech people on it. So it's hard to communicate, because a lot of people, get information from me from my regular Facebook page. So that being said, if you would go to my website, which is ericmetaxas.com, and sign up for my newsletter. Once a week, we send out a newsletter via email with all the information that we want to put on it, information that normally I would put on Facebook. But you just have to go to ericmetaxas.com, ericmetaxas.com. You'll see it. I hope you'll sign up for it, because not being able to speak to you via Facebook is frustrating. Of course, there's Twitter. And also, Albin and Chris, last night, I hope you enjoyed the Not Allowed to Laugh conversation that I did on Facebook Live with Adam Carolla.
I'm still laughing. Ha ha ha.
I think we're gonna try to air that on this program next week. I just want to say that in case you missed it or you couldn't get it or whatever, we're gonna see if we can air it on the program this week, next week. And I should mention that the allergies are so bad, I'm not sure how to put sentences together. I know I sound foggy, and that's because I'm very foggy. It is unbelievable. Here in New York, I went for a run yesterday, and I just thought I need to like have a sinus rinse or something. This is like, it is so bad here. Forgive me for saying sinus rinse. It's a family program. Before we go, let me remind everyone, we're doing a fundraiser with Angel Tree. Folks, I'm begging you, please go to our radio website, MetaxasTalk.com. Click on the banner. There are kids all over America in every state whose parents are incarcerated. We send them to prison fellowship Angel Tree Camp. It's a wonderful camp every summer. This summer, a lot of them will not be able to go because of the shutdown. So we're sending them packages. We do need your help. I'm begging you, folks, go to MetaxasTalk.com. Give what you can. Get your kids involved. It's an extraordinary opportunity to help the children of prisoners. And that's at MetaxasTalk.com. And also, if you want to go to GivingMasks.com/Eric, we're doing a thing with Giving Masks. They create masks. What do they call it? PPEs? Personal yes. protection, mm-hmm. something, whatever. If you want really high quality masks, we say go to givingmasks.com. But if you put in givingmasks.com/Eric, whatever you get from them in terms of masks, they will donate the same number of masks to some folks on the front line in hospitals here in New York. So we want to encourage you to go to givingmasks.com/Eric. If you're only interested in high quality masks, givingmasks.com/Eric, but they will donate whatever you buy. They will donate masks to frontline workers. And Alvin, am I missing anything?
I don't think so. By the way, you're looking great today. The hair, the wig.
It's a wig. It's ironic that whenever the wig looks best, I look in my schedule book and it's like, it's time to have it steam cleaned again. And I kind of wonder, why do I spend the money?
I don't know. Because you have it?
Why? Why do I spend the money? I think
the wig is triggering to millennials, by the way.
On the what?
Your wig triggers the millennials.
I know.
To piggyback on the No Safe Spaces.
It's a peruke. Well, anyway, I think we're out of time today. Have I ever sounded foggier? It's unbelievable. I hope I sound slightly less foggy tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Hey.